I was able to work on different things because there was nobody else telling me that I had to do something.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Before we jump in today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I'm very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at Dr. Dish B-Ball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase. Coach Wolf, welcome to the Hoop Nerds.
Well, thank you. This is quite a pleasure.
It is quite a pleasure to go a long time without seeing each other. So we were talking about this before we started, but you actually coached me for one tournament in my AAU days in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll give a shout out to Tom Desitel for that. And here we are all these years later, still talking about basketball.
Yeah, once you get involved in the basketball world, you understand how small it can get as you get older. And it's always a good thing because you see and hear about people that you may have had played against, coached against, played with, It's an amazing sport that we're all involved in.
Yeah, absolutely. So keeping with the amazing sport, let's start by reflecting on the first time that you were coaching and a story that sticks with you and a learning moment from that first time you coached.
Well, now you're really testing my knowledge or my memory banks because I'm old. I've been coaching for 20 plus years. So the first time that I was coaching would have been with my brother Jeff as an assistant coach and at Kohler High School. And I think it was it being in charge of the second team to make the first team better and to add energy every day to some players that we were really good at Kohler High School that year. And we had they were strong, 6-7 players, maybe even 8 players deep. And all of those players, or most of those players, went to my camps as they were growing up. And so I was quite familiar with them. The second unit guys, they were, a small high school. So they were athletes, but I'm not so sure that they were as skilled in basketball, but they wanted to be part of a team sport. As I said, the first team was really good. We won state that year. So it was a high IQ, high skill set from the first team. So the second team had to challenge the first team every day in practice. And it was my job to run the second team and make them competitive. So, I built defenses around chaos, and we called it chouse, just as a different. The first team didn't know that what the heck we were talking about. We thought we were speaking German or something. And all it was a different pronunciation of chaos. And we would just add fire to the practice by our chouse defense. And the guys really got involved in it. And I think it really helped the first team get better because we acted like crazy wild men while we were competing against them. And I think it set them up for a different concentration level when they proceeded to regional sectionals and to state.
So I'm curious with that dynamic of the first team, second team, because obviously the second team players want to be the people playing in the games when it comes that time. What kind of challenges did you face with getting them to buy into your chouse philosophy and your scout team concept, knowing that they didn't ultimately want to be with you, they wanted to be on the other side?
Well, it was their opportunity to compete. And the old adage in the pros is work your minutes, whether you get a second or you get 48 minutes. It's to work that time that you get because of the fact that you don't know who's watching. So in taking these young athletes, I was challenging their competitive spirit every day and trying to draw that out and not even think about the woe is me, I'm not getting playing time aspect. It was, we're going to compete as hard as we can in this possession and see what we can do.
With obstacles, and I'm curious about your playing transition from the playing side, playing professionally in the NBA at a very high level for many years, and then going over to coaching. What was the biggest obstacle you faced making that transition a successful one?
I think the obstacle was trying to find the passion and competition in coaching as I found in playing. So it took a while to figure out I'm not going to be able to exert physical energy, physical force on the court to make things happen. How do I compete and help my team win that possession? And so finding the passion and competitive part of that was the obstacle that I think almost every player who goes into coaching struggles with.
When you got into coaching, then you have an established philosophy based on what you know at that point in your coaching career. So I'm curious, over the course of your lengthy coaching career, what's an idea or theory that you had early that you believed in that now you've changed your mind about because you're presented with new information later in your career?
Well, one of the unique things about my coaching career was I obviously played at every level. And then when I started to coach, I was a head coach of a JV team for a game. I was an assistant at Kohler High School under my brother for 4 years. Then I went to William & Mary for just over a year and got an opportunity to be a head coach in the CBA, which was a precursor to today's G League. And for me, there wasn't anybody telling me what I needed to do or how to do it. It was, what can I do to help my team win? And I had to formulate the foundation for offense, for defense, for transition defense, for every aspect. I mean, I would get into the Boys and Girls Club and I would sweep the floor and set up the clocks and then tape the guy's ankles. That's what the CBA was all about when I started coaching. And for me, that was fascinating because I loved every part of that and it taught me so much. But what was unique in terms of the coaching aspect was I could do something different in every training camp defensively. Did I want to force middle? Did I want to force baseline? Did I want to guard my yard? So I was able to do and test out the different styles of defense on ball pressure and develop a system around that with terminology and the whole bit so that when I was hoping to get to the big leagues, I would have a framework of my own teachings to say, well, this may help us because this is what I did. I could show the head coach, you know, this is how it played out. And these are the drills I ran around it to help the team function better by building habits around the system.
It's really neat that you kind of had your own playground to learn from and make your own challenges with. And somebody like myself, who I used AAU as that playground, I had my own AAU program, I coached my own teams, and then I was able to change the philosophy, change the terminology until I figured out what I wanted it to be to eventually when I got my head coach. So it's a concept that obviously used in the CBA at a professional level that can translate to anybody who wants to get into the coaching world. You just have to be able to do those things like sweep the floor and tape the ankles, which is so important because then you have a great perspective.
Absolutely.
In the G League, talk to me a little bit about how coaching those players was different than college players or maybe NBA players, because that is such a unique area of people wanting, obviously, to move up to the highest level.
Well, in some respects, it's all about opening guys' eyes up to different ways. Some guys think they come in there and they think that they're NBA players and they're NBA ready. Some guys are coming in with the mindset I need to develop to get to a higher pay grade. Some guys are coming there with the chance to come back from a higher pay grade with the development or the ability to be seen to play in the NBA. So my responsibility to every player, as I would tell them in our individual meetings, was to make sure that they were building habits so that they would make more as a professional. And that was the most important thing that I think I stressed to them, because if they got better, we got better. And as we got better, everybody benefits from that. So teaching the different levels within a practice was always a fun thing for us to enlighten guys where they are, where they wanted to be, and how to get there was a constant game plan, but also a constant battle.
You just mentioned they're teaching them at different levels. Can you elaborate on what you mean by that?
Sure. So we had guys that had never played professionally and came to a tryout and made our team. They felt very fortunate to be a professional basketball player at that point and worked every day to earn their spot on the team. But then you had other guys that may have been around for a year or two or three in the G League or had played overseas and wanted to be closer to home for various reasons. And then you've got the your first round picks in the G League draft that they want to play in the NBA, and this is their shot. You've got your two-way players that the parent club signs, and they can play 44 days with the parent club until they either have to sign an NBA contract or are released. Other than those 44 days, they're with you. And then you've got the assigned players, the players that are under contract by the parent club that will be playing for you. So you've put all of that into a bucket, and then sometimes you have all of those players, and sometimes you don't have any assigned players, and sometimes you don't have any two-way players, and then some other players who had been playing well but don't think that they have their agent is telling them they probably won't get a shot at the NBA. They go overseas in the middle of the season, so you're always trying to wrap your head around the fact that at practice one day you might have seven players or eight players, or for a game seven or eight players. And I'll tell you, in playing and coaching the 6 years in the minor leagues that I did, the hardest thing as a coach was to play against a team that had seven or eight players. It wasn't the teams that were fully stacked that always worried me. It was the teams that had seven or eight guys, because every guy knew that they were going to play because they had to. And they were going to get their 16 to 30 minutes. And they were all happy and enthused. There was no crying. There was no, and those were the teams that always scared me.
So the assigned players and players coming and going, I'm curious what kind of tools you use to manage the players on your roster, because you would be bringing in a player who would be gobbling up other players' minutes on certain nights, and how you were able to handle that dynamic so that people were comfortable and could ultimately find their own success.
Yeah, I'd like to think that if you spoke to any of the players that played for me in the past, that they would tell you that as soon as something happened, I understood what it meant for every player involved, and that I would bring players in and talk to them directly so that they wouldn't have any preconceived notion about what may or may not happen. I tried to paint as candid a picture as I could for them, so that they understood, hey, this is the business. This isn't college anymore. It's not high school. You know, we're not in seventh grade where everybody might play, 8 minutes or whatever in a rotation. This is, we're getting paid. And in the G League, if an assigned player or two-way player comes down, they're going to play, because that's what the G League is built for. And unfortunately, the guys who are your G League players are hurt by that. And so the more candid you are with them, the more upfront you are and with them, they become not only better basketball players but they understand the game better. And I think in the end, They understand the business side a bit better and come with a more positive attitude. You know, they're still hurting inside, and I know it, because they want to compete and they want to show themselves. And it's one of those opportunities that they're not going to be able to do that. And but I think it has always helped my programs in regards to having a cohesive unit, being as candid as possible when those situations arise.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who is in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just the Game Fieldhouse, which is a must visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just the Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just the Game Impressions and Just the Game Live. Just the Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just the Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just the Game has to offer, check them out at justthegamefieldhouse.com.
Sideline Interactive delivers digital and LED scoring tables and video boards that generate excitement in your gym and the ultimate game day experience for your players and fans. We provide you the blueprint and the game plan to generate $10,000 or more in sponsorship revenue every year. 95% of our schools generate enough advertising dollars during the first school year to pay for their purchase. Any school or college can qualify for no fee, no interest financing over 2 school years. We're ready and able to deliver your order to you within 3 to 4 weeks. The tables and boards can be used for any indoor sport, as well as watching game film, school assemblies, signing days, or any other event that is held in your gym. Visit sidelineinteractive.com or call 832-786-0302 to schedule a 15 to 30 minute live web demo to see our tables and boards in action and what these fantastic products can do for you. Or email sales@sidelineinteractive.com. A link to sidelineinteractive.com is in the show notes for today's episode.
So now I found this tidbit about the Ukrainian national team I want to ask you about, because international basketball is really intriguing to me. So can you tell me about the most enjoyable part of participating with the Ukrainian national team as a coach?
Well, I have to tell you, it was one of the most unbelievable things I've ever done. I was fortunate enough to have Coach Fratello ask me to be on his staff. That was first and foremost a big step for me. And then the group of coaches that we had over there was such a cohesive unit, and we all brought different strengths and weaknesses to Coach Fratello that we just instantly gelled. We spent between, I think, 65 and 75 days for 3 summers overseas. And so we were spending a lot of time together. And so we took this young group of Ukrainian players, and who weren't ranked high, were ranked very low on the FIBA rankings, European rankings. And for 3 years, we worked with them, and we guided them to, we missed the final 8 of the World Cup in 2014 by 1 point, getting out of our pod and playing in the final 8. We played against Steph Curry and that crew in Bilbao, Spain, in our pod. And that was one of the highlights of my coaching career, but it was also one of the toughest spots, because I had never been on the other side when the national anthem was being played. So that was really, really tough after spending 3 summers with these guys and having such wonderful experiences in the country of Ukraine, to have the Stars and Stripes be played before the game and I'm on the other side. So that was really tough. But I that whole experience was one of growth for me as a coach, because I was around Coach Fratello every day, and Bob Hill and Jack Nolan and Rich Dolatry, all guys who had many, many years in the NBA and in the basketball world. And we would take some tremendous walks in all the countries that we were in and just talk basketball. And it was so enlightening and so thrilling for me as a basketball geek to geek out on these stories. And then, you know, the young guys we had were me in terms of young in coaching years. Jay Larinaga, who's now an assistant coach with the Clippers, longtime assistant coach with the Celtics. And then Eric Glass, he's down in Miami with the Heat. I mean, we just had a very, very strong staff. And the young players that we had grew together as a group and literally grew because, you know, they were scrawny little kids when we got there. And not kids, but young men to, you know, really high class athletes when we played in the World Cup in Spain in 2014. So it was a thrilling time. I really looked forward to going overseas. And the other thing about it was we went to so many countries and saw so many different cultures in Europe. It was incredible to be able to do that because of the game of basketball.
So I'm going to roll with this idea of geeking out on basketball, and we're going to transition. We're going to talk about defensive concepts and how they're going to change. So I'm curious, talk to me a little bit about some of the rule changes in the NBA that you're seeing occurring and how that's going to affect defensive concepts.
Well, they've taken the unnatural motion away from offensive players. And in doing so, it's allowed the defense to be a little bit more physical. So you'll notice that, you know, three-point shooting is down. And why is it down? Well, you're able to close out a little bit tighter because you're not as afraid of somebody wrapping your arm up into a shot and then going to the line for a three-pointer. So I think you're seeing closeouts are a little bit tighter, so three-point shots aren't as free as they used to be. I think with the physicality that's allowed, you know, it's tougher to score at the rim. I haven't seen numbers in terms of overall scoring numbers, but I do know that three-point shooting percentage is down, field goal percentage is down. And I would look at the younger coaches in the league that have to have the mindset that, you know, the offense has changed so much in the past 5 years because of the rules that were in place before this year. And everybody ran a lot of the same stuff offensively. I would think that some of the younger coaches coming up have got to think that they can change the game defensively. And with that being said, you know, different type of zone, maybe some three-quarter stuff, just to control the game more from a defensive side of the ball.
So if you were going to be putting in a defensive concept, what is one thing that you would change or you would do with the team that you were coaching to try to improve your odds?
Oh, I have my thoughts. I definitely have my thoughts, and I have worked out different defenses that I think are quite valuable in today's game. But I'm not going to throw that out to the basketball nerds because, you know, maybe I'll get a job because of my thinking. But I am always, you know, that's the kind of geek I am when I see a game and I watch plenty of games at night that I am always trying to figure out what would work, how it would work, what nuances you would have to teach because of the way the game is played. And that's what keeps me fresh.
All right, so let's try this approach then. When you were in the CBA and you were working out your kinks, what is one thing that you implemented then that you are really happy that you did implement?
You know, most coaches teach force baseline. The year that my team lost in the D-League championship, we lost in overtime, we forced middle. And I had my tumble philosophy back then. And I thought it really was effective in taking away the ball screens and whatever happens from a ball screen. And not only made an impact on the three-point shooter coming off the screen, but we also controlled either the pop or the roll, man. And so I always thought that that was a valuable thing I learned from my tumble defense.
Can you elaborate on tumble defense a little bit and what that entails?
No, I can't. No, because I hope to get a job with it. I just, like I said before, I was able to work on different things because there was nobody else telling me that I had to do something. So, my first year, I went guard your yard. So it was upon you to make things happen on the ball. And we still did the typical ball screen defenses, but, the second year I was baseline, and then the third year it was force middle. It was a fascinating year, and that's all I'm giving you. That's all. I don't care what other questions you're going to ask me. That's all I'm giving you.
No worries. No, I'm curious when you changed, you know, your philosophy, middle, baseline, guard your yard. Was it purely out of you playing with it, or was it based on personnel?
No, it was well. In the old CBA, you didn't know your personnel until 4 or 5 days before you practiced. So there was no way that you could say, well, I'm going to have this type of team. You had a draft, you had free agents come in a couple days later, and you were practicing. So it was something that I would go to the summer leagues, the NBA summer league. Sometimes I was fortunate enough to work, like Mike D'Antoni allowed me to hang out with the Sun Summer League team two summers in a row. That was a good thing, great thing for my career. I can't thank him enough for that. But it was just, I would sit, you know, there are so many games during Summer League, and I would literally, if we weren't playing, I would sit in the gym and I would watch all these games and take notes and see what would happen if a certain thing would play out on the court. And it just made me keep working. And I wanted to actually, when I started coaching, was to try to have defenses evolve just out of need. So that's where it came from. It was for me, it was interesting. It kept me fresh. It made me think and rethink and think again about what I was trying to do by setting habits and on the defensive end, and how a whole system could be based on ball pressure and which way we force the ball.
Beautiful. I love that. And the summer I went to summer league, I did the same thing, going between the gyms and watching and analyzing. And it was a joy for me to sit in there as a hoop nerd to see how things were unfolding. Two questions to get you out of here with. You mentioned watching a lot of basketball now. I'm assuming there's some NBA league pass involved with that. So who's the most intriguing NBA team to watch for you right now?
Well, I think it changes based on injuries or unfortunately COVID. I'm intrigued by the Warriors' start. I was intrigued early on by the Wizards' start. I think Tommy Shepard has done a great job there of building a team. So I was very intrigued by that. I love to watch Miami and their defense and how it plays and plays out. So, and I love watching Nick Nurse up in Toronto because he and I are the same ilk. He came out of the CBA and the D-League, and I should say D-League, and he tries different things. He's ready for different things. So I enjoy watching his teams play.
Okay, we have some teams to watch. All right, last.
Well,
question.
And obviously I got to say the Bucks, because that's my, you know, I'd get in trouble if I didn't. And here's a little story.
Sure.
My fiance's aunt used to babysit for Mike Budenholzer.
Wow! See, the small basketball world coming in again.
Just found that out.
Wow. All right, non-basketball related question to get you out of here with, and think a little bit about. If you could have one superhero power, what would it be and what would you do with it?
Wow. I would think that it would have to come down to a superhero power of kindness or a superhero power of candidness. I don't think there's enough of that in the world.
All right, how would you use those for improvement or to help others?
I think when you're candid with people and people realize that, it takes away all of the other things that might be out there in the world today. And I think people respect that when it comes down to being candid with your own thoughts. Whether people agree with you or not, they understand that you are who you are. And you have your own thoughts and they respect that. So I think that takes away a lot of the stuff in the world. Kindness is always easy. If you're kind to somebody, you'll get a smile.
Absolutely beautiful coaching thoughts to end with. Coach Wolf, thank you for coming and sharing on the Hoop Nerds.
Hey, anytime you need to geek out, you let me know.
I'll let you know for sure, because it happens very often in this house.
Thank you.
Calling all Hoop Nerds, the 608 basketball tournament is coming to Madison December 17th and 18th. This event will host high school basketball's best, including La Crosse Central, Yorkville Christian, DeForest, and Madison La Follette. This event is being hosted at Madison College and features current players committed to Duke and Northern Michigan. Get your tickets today at madisoncollegerecreation.com. Hoop Nerds, you won't want to miss out on this one-of-a-kind event. I hope to see you December 17th and 18th at Madison College. And be sure to get your tickets today at madisoncollegerecreation.com.